Greetings, everyone, and welcome to today's Sabbath message. I want to ask that you remember those in prayer who have the sniffles or down with a bug who can't be here today. We have several who are in that situation, but that's the time of the year, I guess. You know, it's weather starts getting warm, and out comes the little viruses. If you're old enough, you remember when they called the car's accelerator a foot feed. And you remember when it was special to have something store-bought. I'm not quite that old, but those that are a few years older than I probably do. Of course, just about everything is store-bought today. But once it was quite an honor to have something store-bought, to have a store-bought dress or to have a store-bought bag of candy. Coast to coast is a phrase that once held all sorts of excitement. And now means almost nothing. Not even worldwide means too much anymore. When I was young, wall to wall was kind of a magical term. In our homes in the 1950s, everyone was covering their hardwood floors with wall to wall carpet. Now they're taking their wall to wall carpet out and covering everything with hardwood floors. Technology has done away with the term percolator. That was kind of a fun word even to say, percolator. There was even a little musical ditty they used to play, you know, percolating and all that. It was fun. You know, I kind of miss those marketing words that were meant to sound so modern, but now they sound so retro. Words like Dynaflow and Electrolux and introducing the 1963 Admiral TV, now with SpectraVision. My mother used to talk a lot about lumbago. The pain in her lower back. You don't hear about that anymore. Apparently it's no longer around. Maybe castor oil did away with it, because you don't see castor oil anymore either. Words are extremely powerful tools to freeze time and shape our present philosophy, not only of individuals, but also of a nation. Look how Hitler made the most powerful country in Europe putty in his hands, through just the mere expression of words. Commanding, controlling speeches. This guy was nothing more than a corporal in the army. And yet, he had a genius, possessed probably, but a genius in persuasive dialogue. He knew exactly how to push the right buttons of a demoralized people, fresh off a devastating defeat of World War I, and ready again to go at it again. And he expressed in words the frustrations they were feeling in their hearts. The power of words is enormous. Every poet knows it. Every preacher knows it. Every teacher knows it. So does every actor. The pen is mightier than the sword. Well, Hasatan has a lot of weapons in his arsenal, but the perverted use of words to change thought and behavior is one of the most successful that he's using right now today. Today I want to discuss one of the most effective ways in which the evil one is deceiving our culture to swing over to the dark side. We've come to the point where those who would have us completely change our ideology and system of belief from a Bible-based ethic to something out of the pit of Gehenna have made a first strike, a bold move. They have taken a page out of the book of despots. They are changing our cultural values by changing our vocabulary. This has been known since its beginnings in the 1980s as the political correct movement. People today fear violating political correctness like they once feared violating the Ten Commandments, which it has now replaced, by the way. Some defined it as merely the resentment of spoiled children directed against their parents' values. But this characteristic masks something far more insidious. The minds and hearts of the people today are at stake. How does it work? At some point, someone realized that if you can get people to be conscious of what they say so they don't offend anyone, no matter how wretched the behavior of that person might be, then their brains and then their beliefs and then their actions will follow their speech. If you can convince someone that their stand against sin is tantamount to hate, expressed by hate speech, you begin to influence and ultimately change their moral values. Words shape thoughts because thoughts are expressed by words. If you can alter the very building blocks of thought, then you're on your way to changing views and beliefs as well. PC language, political correct language, works like a euphemism, words used to soften or mask the true meaning. We have euphemisms in the Bible that are used to soften, or the King James actually did a lot of that too, because certain things were not, you know, they didn't want to say them outright, so they masked them in a euphemism. I think it was when the prophets of Baal were trying to call down their mighty ones to, you know, take care of this offering they had out there. The scripture says, well, maybe he's pursuing, you know, which means he's out going to the bathroom. But that's a euphemism. They didn't want to come right out and use the bold-faced term. Well, we've got that all over in our culture, don't we? We have it all over in our language. Instead of, you know, bombing the enemy, the military is sending in air support. It doesn't sound quite so bad, does it? Air support. Corporations, instead of calling it firing, they call it, well, we're downsizing. Downsizing. It's a replacement for the word of, you know, or like being laid off. So instead of calm the masses, instead of increasing taxes, they're increasing domestic revenue. These techniques of semantics influence our thought by pointing our emotions in a different direction, even though the truth is still there. It kind of brings it in, you know, through the side door. Advertisers like to use it. They define their products in ways that don't have any negative connotations. Advertisers want to sell products. However, there are other groups in society that have a different agenda. They're trying to sell an agenda. Many words are considered no longer usable or whose meanings have been altered to make them difficult to use. These were all words that at one time could be freely used at some point in society, in our culture, but modern culture is attempting to stamp them out and in the same vein to change reality, to change perception of reality. So today, instead of a broken home, we have a dysfunctional family. You substitute a big Latin or Greek word, and you can better hide the bad connotations. And hence, what you do is you engender fuzzy thinking. And there's another key. The psychologists love it, because you have to have clear thinking to speak clearly. People who speak clearly are, you know, like John Wayne or Ross Perot. You know, you know what he says when he says it. There's nothing hidden there. But the average politician, oh, he cloaks his words in fine language. That, what does he really mean when he said that, you know? Today, I mean, the word factory, you don't hear much of that anymore. Now it's a plant. A plant. The word factory is a place where mistreated laborers toil long hours to produce pollution that billows from gigantic smokestacks. That's a factory. But the word plant carries a less negative connotation, since it also describes nature. Its counterpart noun describes plant life, as in flowers and shrubs. And the verb form to plant is the process of lovingly putting something in the ground and watching it grow, like a mighty oak. Who can complain about having a new plant in their backyard? Just call it something else. Today it's not jungle. You don't hear jungle much anymore. You hear rainforest. A rainforest is a happy place where Disney characters dance and sing. A jungle is a scary place with lions and tigers and snakes and malaria and wild natives that want to put you in soup, boil you for dinner. Who in their right mind would want that? No, we want a rainforest. In the same way, you don't hear swamp anymore either. Now it's wetlands. Wetlands. Swamps are full of alligators and bugs and disease. If anybody went around saying we need to save the swamps, people would literally think they're crazy or perhaps mentally challenged or selectively perceptive. Groups with special interests and beliefs have made good use of semantics, brethren, and they're deceiving a culture. Pro-abortionists don't like to be called baby killers, which is what they are. They want to be called pro-choice. Never mind that that choice has to do with murder. Homosexuality is called gay, connotating something happy, something pleasing. Do you know AIDS was first called GRIDS? Gay-related immunodeficiency. Now it's just acquired immunodeficiency. You catch it like you catch a cold shaking someone's hand. It doesn't have the connotations it once had. You realize that the desire here is to remove anything perceived as opposing an agenda, a social agenda. The psychologists are in league with the unholy agenda groups as well. Each is out to change societal values through language, from language to thought, then to belief. When the Bible believer comes along standing in sound principles and saying no to their sin, that's a negative they can't handle. The thing sinners hate the most is the word no. You tell a toddler there, no, we didn't want to hear that. You tell teenagers, no, you can't go out drinking and driving. They don't want to hear that. Neither does anybody. The natural man wants the full freedom to do what he pleases. Natural man wants to do what he wants, when he wants, with no restraints, no rigid standards, and certainly no conscience. The Bible believer has become the conscience, the guilty conscience of a society that doesn't want to go that direction. An illustration, I think, is almost like a society in a nutshell, is a report I read about Toastmasters, you know, the organization that teaches you how to speak, public speaking. The club that teaches you through a highly disciplined method what and what not to do when you're speaking in public and how to present, you know, an effective message. Well, this one was a report about Toastmasters in Australia, and I don't know if it's the same here or not. Apparently, at least down under, Toastmasters lost its purpose. How did that happen? Well, as the club came together, the members were more interested in socializing than they were in for the purpose that they're there for, to learn how to speak. And as they became more concerned about the delights of having a good time and less concerned about the disciplines of public speaking, they became more intolerant of those who were earnest in learning the art of rhetoric. They came there for the purpose. These others didn't like that. Those members who did their duty by, you know, pointing out the shortcomings of a man's message or a person's message were labeled as negative, discouraging. Later, it became a risk of being socially ostracized. And since 1998, unpopularity can result in being permanently ejected from that club. We see the same thing in society, don't we? Same thing. The same situation has come about. So the entire purpose for the existence of Toastmasters was destroyed because the trend was not to criticize or hold others to any standard. There is no standard. We don't need a standard. And this is occurring worldwide today on a greater scale. The PC crowd is being successful in convincing the culture that taking a stand on biblical law, for instance, against sodomy, is hateful behavior. You are not loving, you are hateful when you take a stand. So a person who wants to live a life of obedience to the one they worship and serve is acting in a hateful way. The whole thing has been turned upside down. It's all about making evil good and good evil through language and behavior. Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 5. Isaiah chapter 5 is a prophecy for our times. I want to look at verse 20. Yahweh saw it coming. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes, prudent in their own sight. And how do they do it? Through language, through words, twisting and making something bad sound good, something good sound really bad. Hateful speech. Right now in Canada, it's becoming a crime to stand up and preach like this. Someday it will happen here, no doubt. Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine and men of strength to mingle strong drink, which justify the wicked for reward. And notice this, verse 23, take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. Therefore, as the fire devours the stubble and the flame consumes the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness and their blossom shall go up as dust, because they have cast away the law of Yahweh of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. That's how it happened. Everything got turned upside down, got perverted. The Bible believer is the main obstacle standing between them and their complete decadent freedom, which is what they're after. We're the enemy of the evildoer, brethren, and we are in a spiritual war, believe it or not. We're not wrestling flesh and blood. Paul said in Ephesians 6, we're not out there, you know, hand-to-hand combat like they are over in Iraq. No, no. We're fighting a much more difficult war. For we wrestle not, in verse 12, against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Then he says and admonishes us to take the whole armor of Elohim. How do you arm yourself in this warfare? How do you do it? Just so you can stand. He says, stand, having your loins girt. Number one, with the truth. To understand when you see error, that isn't the truth, no matter what they tell you. And having on the breastplate of righteousness to live that truth, so it becomes a part of you. And your feet shall have the preparation of the good news of peace. Know the word, know Yahweh's word. Taking the shield of faith, and notice 17, the helmet of salvation, along with the sword of the Spirit. All these things are necessary. Praying always, that's necessary too. You don't get swallowed up. You got to stay firm in your association with Yahweh. Watching, vigilant, to recognize when these things come at you, what they really are. Very important. This is a great spiritual battle, prophesied thousands of years ago. And here we are. We're living it right now. And Hasatan has pulled out all the stops. People who have strong traditional values based on the Ten Commandments and Scripture are in the crosshairs today. Why shouldn't they be? They're the real obstacle. They're the real enemy of this agenda, this movement. They are ground zero in the war. The missile's radar is locked on them. This is a battle for hearts and minds. It doesn't get any more serious. The radicals are setting the agenda, and they're busily getting those commandments removed from public places, the public square, because they hate Yahweh's law so much. It's not about the establishment of church and state or the establishment of a state church. That's not what it's all about. That's just the legal tool they use to get the courts on their side. No, it's not about church-state separation. For goodness sakes, brethren, go to any courthouse, any state house in the land, and you're going to see inscriptions from the Bible engraved all over in the stone, and have been for up to centuries. The Supreme Court itself has four depictions of the Ten Commandments there. Do you see the government, after 200 years, now suddenly feeling threatened because a state church is being established? Hogwash! It's just the opposite. We see secularism taking over the church. We see politically correct language infiltrating pulpits as churches compete for the world, for dollars. There's no problem with establishing a church state. That's not the reason, but that's the reason they use in court. Oh, we can't have those commandments up there because that's sponsoring a church or a religion. Nuts! You ever seen that happen? That's crazy. People just ignore them. I mean, it doesn't really matter. They just walk by them anyway. But they're making an issue of them. At the core of this is Yahweh's laws, and that's what's so ironic about the whole thing. And that's what they detest the most. The modern religious community is watering down their stand in fear. They cannot come out and say, sin is sin, so quit doing it, or face the consequences without first emasculating their message with some PC language. Love the sinner, but hate the sin, they say. Did Yahweh separate the sinner from the sin when he killed 24,000 worshipers of Nimrod in Numbers 25? Did he love the sinner but hate the sin when he liquefied Sodom and Gomorrah with a nuclear holocaust? Sometimes the sin and the sinner are inextricably bound. There isn't much more you can do. The corruption is so deep. Certainly we want to reach those who have a problem with sin. We want to. We want to make them change to understand Yahweh's words, certainly. But watch the PC language, because they want to water it down and want to just make you give up and walk away and say, well, you know, he's a good person anyway, you see. That's what they want. Sure, Yahweh wants everybody to repent, but there are those incorrigible who certainly won't. How is Yahshua going to handle the sinner when he comes back to set up his righteous rule? Is he going to water down his message to make it more politically correct, palatable to everyone? Or is he going to come back with a double-edged sword, swinging first and asking questions later? Let's turn to Revelation 19. Make no mistake, brethren, we're not fooling around. Yahweh has a message. And I saw an angel standing in the sun, I'm in Revelation 19, 17, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the fowls that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather yourselves together unto the supper of the great Elohim, that you may eat the flesh of kings, the flesh of captains, the flesh of mighty men, and the flesh of horses, and of them that sit on them, and the flesh of all men, both free and bond, both small and great. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. Love the sinner but hate the sin. How's that gonna pan out in this scenario? And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet, and that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. Those both were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. And notice the remnant were slain with the sword of him that sat upon the horse, which sword proceeded out of his mouth. And all the fowls were filled with their flesh. The radical 60 liberals, that's what we're dealing with basically. They want to remake society into a morality-free zone, to take one of their expressions, I guess. To the evildoer, Yahweh's people represent nothing but trouble. They're hateful bigots, which makes us enemies of the community, if not humanity, and deserving of persecution. So now we see the next phase. There are recent cases back east where churchgoers were blocked from entering their church, their place of worship, by sodomites who found out what the minister was going to preach that day and wouldn't let him go in. That's what we're facing in the future, brethren. Some Bible supporters were also arrested recently in a sodomite rally in Philadelphia. Maybe you heard about it. I learned that one of those who was out there holding a sign with some scriptural quote that got him arrested and facing 40 years in prison, I learned that he kept a Feast of Tabernacles in Tennessee a few years back with some group. It's hitting pretty close to home. We can expect to see more persecution. Freedom to teach the Bible will one day come to a screeching halt. It'll stop. As it has in Canada, in many places, and in Europe. Well, they hardly preach the Bible there anyway, so it really doesn't matter. Luke 12. Yahshua said, you'll be hauled before magistrates. Now, what does that mean? I know one religious organization meant that you're going to be come before kings and you're going to bring them expensive gifts and you're going to have your picture taken. It's going to be published on a magazine and you'll be a great man. Is that what it's talking about here? Luke 12:18. No, that's not the one I want. Start at verse 9. He that denied me before men shall be denied before the angels of heaven. Whosoever shall speak a word against the Son of Man, it shall be forgiven him. But unto him that blasphemes against the Spirit, it shall not be forgiven him. And when they bring you into the synagogues and into magistrates and powers, take ye no thought how or what thing you shall answer, or what you shall say. For the Spirit shall teach you in the same hour what you ought to say. Why are you going to be hauled before magistrates? What do you suppose that's for? Do magistrates and judges suddenly come to their senses and say, I need to repent. Would you come and preach to me? Because they want to learn the truth? No. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 10. Same account, different words in some ways, but a little more explanation. Matthew 10, verse 18. You shall be brought before governors and kings, notice, for my sake. It's for Yahweh's purpose. You might be a Daniel, you might be a Jeremiah, you might be an Eliah, come before kings for the purpose of Yahweh. What? For a testimony against them and the Gentiles, for a witness, to tell them what the truth is. But when they deliver you up, take no thought how or what you shall speak. For it shall be given you in that same hour what you shall speak. For it is not you that speaks. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about, you know, preparing a message or how I'm going to say this or what do I say. The Spirit of your Father is going to speak in you. And then it says in verse 22, you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake. You know, 30 years ago, I couldn't imagine how this could really pan out, you know, because this country was a church-going nation, you know, 30 years ago. Now I can see it, and I can see this political correctness come to fruition so that values are changed all over the place, and they won't even recognize the Bible. But he that endures to the end shall be saved. But when they persecute you in this city, oh, I thought you were going to be raptured. I guess not. Flee you into another. For verily I say unto you, you shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man come. You have to wait. You're going to be busy until Yahshua comes back. The disciple is not above his master, nor the servant above his master. We're not going to have anything better than Yahshua had. Same thing. We'll be hated for my name's sake, he says. It's time we got out of our comfort zones. We've been called for something a lot greater than living our lives, enjoying the pleasantries and the entertainment of life. Everybody does that. We're called to a different purpose. One day, they will seek to eliminate the believers and their values, just as Yahshua said they would. This will happen when Bible believers will be the small minority, which we're seeing beginning to occur now. Are we prepared for that time? Have we been battle-hardened through spiritual warfare? I suspect each of us has a ways to go in that regard. I submit that we need a lot more little battles before we're ready for the war. And through these little episodes that we face now in life, Yahweh is strengthening us for a time when we're going to need that strength. And we're going to have His Spirit and strength to stand. A society declines when the majority, through pure selfishness, slowly dismantle all the restraints upon self-indulgence that's been established through custom and through years and traditions, in our case, through scriptural foundations. It happened to Rome when it just self-imploded, giving up the ideals it once had. It'll happen to us as we deny the Creator who made us and the laws He set as our standard of behavior. As each subsequent generation of foolish, selfish citizens inherits control, they'll take their opportunity to abandon more and more of the foundation, which we've seen in the last 50 years. They publicly embrace absurdity through slogans which vilify any who don't support their stand. And that's how Satan works. He makes you look guilty. He makes you feel odd. He makes you look strange to the society. You've got to have strength. We're seeing a Trojan horse coming in. All the basic institutions are under attack. What they're teaching in public school is just amazing, twisting minds. We have a sister whose daughter went in to school, basically, with the principles that she was taught at home. Guess what? Coming out of school now, coming out of the university up here, she's completely different. It's okay. It's okay, Mom. These people are just, it's a natural thing to be a sodomite. They're okay. Nothing wrong with it. We have politically correct speech because we have moved from a Bible-believing, Bible-based culture to a culture that's defined its own standards. And those standards are based in the teachings of the evil one. It only works basically in one direction. You notice that? They want to forbid you to speak out against sinful behavior, sinful lifestyles. But they want the freedom of speech to attack the scriptures and the moral principles this nation was built on, for the most part. It's a one-way street leading down to a precipice. Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 3. Isaiah chapter 3 and verse 8. Yahweh says, "For Jerusalem is ruined and Judah is fallen because their tongue," notice that, "their tongue and their doings are against Yahweh to provoke the eyes of his glory." They're changing hearts and minds by words. "The show of their countenance does witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not." Sodomite television programs are coming on right and left, if you haven't noticed. And once they make it common, then they make it acceptable. And then they make you supposedly hateful when you say that isn't right. "They have rewarded evil unto themselves." Well, Yahweh has the last say, in other words. "Say ye to the righteous that it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe unto the wicked. It shall be ill with him." Don't worry. Their comeuppance is coming. Yahweh's judgment will come. "It shall be ill with them, for the reward of his hand shall be given him." And then Yahweh kind of kind of in a sad way, he says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of your paths." Yahweh stands up to plead and stands to judge the people. Well, over in chapter 5 of Isaiah, Isaiah is kind of a commentary, I think, more on our culture, Isaiah and Jeremiah, than probably any other prophets. Chapter 5, verse 18, "Woe to them that draw iniquity with cords of vanity, and sin, as it were, with a cart rope, that say, let him make speed and hasten his work, that we may see it, and let the counsel of the Holy One of Israel draw nigh and come, that we may know it. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil." Woe unto them. Verse 21, "Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Woe unto them that are mighty to go out and drink and have a good time." He says the judgment is coming. The judgment is coming. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 24, and I want to close with Yahshua's what's called the Olivet Prophecy because it was on the Mount of Olives. We read that they're going to take you up. Here again he says, take you before the authorities. "Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted," verse 9, "and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake." We shouldn't be surprised if they don't like the truth. It says they're going to. And that's just more affirmation that the Bible is right when they hate the truth. "For his name's sake. And then shall many be offended and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." Because there's so much sin, it's difficult to want to stop and help your neighbor because you don't know what he's going to do, pull a gun on you or a knife or something, kidnap you, who knows? But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. So we have to endure until the end. Zephaniah 2:3. What is our goal? What is our purpose here? What are we here for? Zephaniah 2:3 is a warning to Jerusalem, this whole chapter. It says, "Seek ye Yahweh, all ye meek of the earth, which have wrought his judgment. Seek righteousness. Seek meekness." You know, the power of truth is there. You don't have to go out and scream it. Just tell them what it is. It'll convict. It will convict. It may be you shall be hid in the day of Yahweh's anger. There's a promise there, you see. We stick to the word. Stick to the truth. There'll be a blessing coming that you might be hid in the day of Yahweh's anger. He might take you on the wings of the eagle to the wilderness to protect you when that final catastrophe comes. "For Gaza shall be forsaken, Ashkelon a desolation. They shall drive out Ashdod at the noonday, and Ekron shall be rooted up. Woe unto the habitants of the seacoast, the nation of the Cherethites." You know, where is our nation being attacked? The blue states, at least on the east coast. "Woe unto the inhabitants of the east coast. The word of Yahweh is against you, O Canaan, the land of the Philistines. I will even destroy you, that there shall be no inhabitant. And the sea coast shall be dwellings of cottages and shepherds and folds for flocks. And the coast shall be for the remnant of the house of Judah. They shall feed thereupon, and the houses of Ashkelon shall they lie down in the evening. For Yahweh their Elohim shall visit them and turn away their captivity." It's a warning to Jerusalem, a warning to Yahweh's people. Verse 9, "Therefore, as I live, says Yahweh of hosts, Elohim of Israel, surely Moab shall be as Sodom, and the children of Ammon as Gomorrah, even the breeding of nettles and salt pits, and a perpetual desolation. The residue of my people shall spoil them, and the remnant of my people shall possess them. This shall they have for their pride, because they have reproached and magnified themselves against the people of Yahweh of hosts. Yahweh will be terrible unto them, for he will famish all the Elohims of the earth, and men shall worship him, every one from his place, even all the isles of the heathen. Ethiopians shall be slain by his sword, and he shall stretch out his hand against the north and destroy Assyria. And he will make Nineveh a desolation and dry like a wilderness. And flocks shall lie down in the midst of her. All the beasts of the nations, both the cormorant and the bittern, shall lodge in the upper lintels of it. Their voice shall sing in the windows. Desolation shall be in the thresholds, for he shall uncover the cedar work. This is the rejoicing city that dwelt carelessly, that said in her heart, 'I am, and there is none beside me. I am. I, man, I have the answers. I will tell you what's right and wrong. I will tell you what's politically correct.' How has she become a desolation, a place for beasts to lie down in? Everyone that passes by her shall hiss and wag his hand." Chapter 3, verse 1. "Woe to her that is filthy and polluted, to the oppressing city. She obeyed and not the voice. She obeyed not the voice. She received not correction. She trusted not in Yahweh. She drew not near to her Elohim. Her princes within her are roaring lions. Her judges are evening wolves. They gnaw not the bones till morrow. Her prophets are light and treacherous persons, reckless. They're not based in sound doctrine. They're saying whatever they think they want to say and want to do. And they're treacherous persons, treacherous, deceiving." What did Yahshua say when they first asked him, what will be the sign of your coming? He says, "Don't be deceived. Don't be deceived." Treacherous prophets who get people all looking their other direction here comes Yahshua over here. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. They have done violence to the law. Well, they don't want the law anymore, so they've polluted that too. The just Yahweh is in the midst thereof. He will not do iniquity. Every morning does he bring his judgment to light. He fails not, but the unjust know no shame. Boy, if that doesn't talk about us in this culture today, isn't it? Notice verse 6, I have cut off the nations. Their towers are desolate. Their towers are desolate. I made their streets waste, that none passes by. Their cities are destroyed, so that there is no man, that there is none inhabitant. I said, surely you will fear me. You will receive the instruction. So their dwelling should not be cut off, howsoever I punish them. But they rose early and corrupted all their doings. They didn't get the message. Therefore wait upon me, he says. Says Yahweh, until the day that I rise up to the prey. For my determination is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms to pour upon them mine indignation, even all my fierce anger. For all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. We're living in tumultuous, troubling times. The new head of the security force in our country says they keep saying this, it's just a matter of time when another big catastrophe is going to happen. They say that they cannot account for some of the nuclear weapons that Russia has lost, could be in terrorist hands. They think maybe a cell in this country is already working on setting off one of these and horrible things. But the people won't listen. But notice verse 9, for then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of Yahweh to serve him with one consent. The name of Yahweh is going to be the unifying factor that's going to bring all people back under his truth. There is something about that name, something that really means something, and that Yahweh is going to use it ultimately to bring his people back one day, that we might all rejoice in his kingdom. When all these problems and trials are gone, he'll wipe away all tears from their eyes. May we have that day soon. May we always think of that and not get bogged down and worried about our present situation, because this is all going to pass. May Yahweh bless you.